This is the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast.
So we're back here on the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast.
Is that what this is?
It is, and I would say I'm honored to have with me. I've never had someone of, like a royal rank. The Brewmaster General, as he hates to be called, Mr. Elliot Plaisance. How are you?
Very well, very well.
So, for those that don't know, Elliot is like my movie-going buddy, I would say.
I've been name-checked a couple times on the podcast.
He has, and he's down to go to the movies when others fail me. He answers the call, particularly when we get knocked out of poker.
Especially then.
So, Elliot, what qualifies you to be on the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast?
I saw a movie with you one time.
But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about something much more controversial today, and that is silence. For those that don't know, I don't know if you're Catholic, you had to have heard of the movie by now. I would say half the people in my internet visitings and in real life love the book Silence and or the movie, or hate it. They say Catholics must read / watch this, or Catholics must not read this or watch this without putting your soul at peril. So,
fair division.
Before we jump into the specifics, is either one of these positions correct? Or is one more correct than the other?
I don't think either position is correct for everybody, which is the easiest thing you could possibly say, right?
Yeah, but it could still be true.
True.
But do you lean one direction or the other more?
I think there's value to it if you're willing to look for beauty in a broken place and still acknowledge that it's deeply broken.
Well said. Because I think, when I read the book, and you read it recently, I read it maybe 5 years ago, and I remember reading it and being violently angry. Not like I beat someone, but I was moved to anger. And I always told people when they asked me about the book, I wouldn't recommend it to you if you're not strong in the faith. Not to imply that I am at all, but you have to have a pretty solid grounding to even wrestle with the issues that the book presents in any way and come out clean.
Certainly in today's culture, where if you don't want to just drift along with the current thought, emotivism, consequentialism, if you really want to wrestle with things, you have to be solidly grounded before you want to see this.
Right. And a lot, if you're out there and you're curious, I imagine if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an above average grounding in the faith,
or else definitely.
You would just not seek out this podcast. You just listen to the Movie Guy Podcast instead of the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast. But still, I would make sure that you know going in what you're getting into, because it's nothing that's going to, it's not an easy film or a book.
And I think many times that's used to cover different things. Oh, this is difficult. This is challenging. We use that for movies like Hacksaw Ridge, which was a great non-morally ambiguous movie for the most part, which was difficult because of the violence. Now, this is a violent movie, but it's not difficult for that reason. It's one thing to have a movie where you have a character go through difficult trials but emerge victorious or emerge with themselves. Spoiler alert there. But, a movie where you have somebody go through harrowing times and not come out substantially okay.
Right.
That's challenging, but in a different way. So I just want to be very clear, because both you and I have seen people mention this movie as, oh, this is a movie about Japanese martyrs. Only part of the truth, okay? And let's just go with our spoiler alert right now. And I don't think it's a spoiler that ruins the movie, but this is a movie about a guy who apostatizes at the end. This is a man who denies the faith.
Right. Not only is this review going to have no provisos for spoilers, but I wouldn't even feel right if I didn't spoil the movie going in, because I would bear some responsibility. You have to... I won't say that the movie can only be evaluated in light of the main character's apostasy. Maybe that's true. But more importantly, I don't think you should watch the movie without knowing that going in, because I think it can really affect you in a negative way. It did me.
You need to be able to let it go.
Yeah. And every review of the movie has spoiled it anyway. But just by way of a brief plot summary, when he says that it's about Japanese Christian martyrs, I mean, it is in a way. It is, ostensibly. but it's really about whether the faith is true or not. And if it is true, how do you live it out in practice? Is the faith true in the same way? And does it dictate practice for everyone in the same way across all places of time and history under all circumstances? Or does it apply or take in different set? Like one of the main questions of the film is Japan fertile ground for the Christian faith at all? And if it is it the same faith as practiced in Japan that it is in Portugal or in France? And if that is true, does it require the same actions, not stepping on an icon of Jesus, that it requires at this point in history versus this point in history? Or do the ends justify the means? These are big questions that the movie, I don't know if it answers them.
I agree with this take. In many ways, the movie is about, you know, what we'll call enculturation, right? You know, mm-hmm. how much can you change the faith by adapting it to another culture?
And still keep
yeah. the faithiness, right? The faith.
Whatever the juicy center is.
Yes, as long as we have the Tootsie Roll Center. Anyway, so in the end, I don't think it's about that. I am cribbing a little info from the book, which is very, very much the same as the movie, except toward the end, there's somewhat of a change. I don't think it's a drastic change, but the book hangs its hat a little bit more on the idea that in the end, all of these arguments don't matter. That throughout the whole movie, throughout the book, there are these questions, you know, if you evangelize somebody and you give them what may be a slightly theologically defective version of the faith, to what extent are they Christians? To what extent does their martyrdom have value, right? These are all questions that you will wrestle with after watching this movie, if you're, you know, someone inclined to do so. But in the end, what you hear from Father Rodriguez is not any of these questions. In the book, he explicitly says, when I apostatized, it wasn't for any of these reasons. It was because of the silence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so the other current in this movie is the central question in life, which is the problem of evil.
Okay, before we get, because we're going deep now. I still haven't given the plot summary, so just briefly. Father Rodriguez and Father Garupe are Portuguese Jesuits. And it's about a century and a half, two centuries after Francis Xavier first preached the gospel to Japan. And their predecessor in the Jesuits, Father Ferreira, played by Liam Neeson, has gone to Japan as a missionary. And his fate has been the subject of scandal. Word has gotten back to Portugal that he has apostatized, that he's now living as a Japanese, he renounced the faith, etc., under persecution. In the movie, their main goal, these two priests, Adam Driver and Andrew Garfield, is to find out the fate of Father Ferreira. In the book, it's more, I think we talked about beforehand, it's more of a half and half thing. It's half to find out what happened to Ferreira, half to just be missionaries as Ferreira was. In the movie, it's really not that clear that they care about the missionary thing at all, which I don't know if it's an intentional choice or a time choice.
To be fair, from the beginning.
Right.
Like, they maybe don't hit the ground running, of course, yes. But they get up to
speed. They end up as missionaries, certainly, but at the beginning. So they do finally make their way into Japan with the help of a Japanese Christian named Kichichiro, who is he really devout? Is he not? He actually apostatizes several times in the movie and in the past, in the present, and the future. He's constantly going back to confession, confessing his apostasy. Is he sincere? These are all questions the movie wrestles with. But they get in, they become acquainted with the hidden Christians there in different villages. Eventually, the two priests get separated. Father Garupe meets what you would call a martyrdom. He never apostatizes, and he dies trying to save the Christians that he's ministering to. Garfield eventually is Father Rodriguez is taken prisoner, and meets with the Grand Inquisitor Inoue, who is, you know, presents the Japanese argument why they're fearful of the Christians, and the Christian religion being becoming a part of Japan. And then eventually, at the end, after not apostatizing, Father Rodriguez is faced with several Christians being tortured in front of him. And apparently they've already apostatized, so it's like he's already failed them in a way. And the Japanese and Father Ferreira, who he eventually meets,
offers him the chance to apostatize and the torture of these people will stop, or it will continue and he can maintain his faith. When he's about to apostatize, and the way they determine apostasy at this moment and elsewhere in the film is by stepping on the fumie, which is an icon of Jesus or Mary or some holy icon. He hears a voice that tells him in a Christ-like manner, it's okay, I've suffered for you, etc. You can step on me. Blah, blah, blah. He steps on it, and then he lives out the rest of the film as an apparent Japanese person. He takes a wife, he has a child, and he continually renounces the faith throughout the remainder of the film from time to time, so the government makes sure that he's still apostate. You know, he hasn't gone back to being a priest. That's the basic plot outline. Is Father Rodriguez, his decision to apostatize, let's just start at the end, because I mean, I can't get
this around. Is what everybody wants to hear.
Exactly. Is it Christ telling him to apostatize, or is it his own inner voice, not just in the book and in the movie, in your opinion? And then, is that choice lamentable or heroic in the opinion of the book and movie?
Okay, in the movie, short of going for the credits and hoping for a gift, I don't think it's entirely clear. I thought I heard Liam Neeson's voice. You strongly disagreed.
I thought it was some third party voice that I didn't
recognize. Which is most likely.
And in the book, it's ambiguous.
Yeah, the book leaves it open whether he's hearing the voice in his head or the voice of Christ. And this is an important distinction. It sounds like a nitpick, but you know, whether the narrator, you know, the creator of the story, has him hearing this in his head, or whether Christ is telling him to do this thing, is, it you know, a huge difference. It's everything in the story. It's whether the story itself is a Christian story, or you know, an unorthodox, a challenging, a heretical, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, a completely different story, and it makes all the difference, which is why we're skipping to it first.
So see, I understand that point, and that was my initial reaction too. The only thing I will say is, when Jesus says in the Bible to Judas, and this is brought up in the film, what thou dost, do quickly, in regard to his betrayal. That's always been a part of the gospel that Christians have had to wrestle with, because is it Christ giving Judas permission to do this? Is it like God willing Judas to betray Christ, which would be an evil? And most commenters say no. And I'm just looking at the Schallinger notes to the passage. I'm just going to read his commentary because I think it's helpful. Referring to the event, it is not a license, much less a command, to go about this treason, but a signification to him that Christ would not hinder or resist what he was about, because he was both ready and desirous to suffer for our redemption. So Christ is ready to suffer for us, and desirous of it, not just accepting of it, but desirous of it, even though he can't will the evil action. So is it the same here, which is, has Father Rodriguez already apostatized in his heart? So Jesus says to him, the actual Jesus says to him, go ahead and do it. You've already betrayed me. It's okay. I know you're going to betray me. I'm not okay with you betraying me, but I understand that you're going to. Just do it. Get it over with. And the reason I bring that part up is that earlier in the movie, he says to the Christians to whom he's ministering, who are being tempted, like he would be later, to step on the icon, apostatize, do it. You know, like, he encourages them already.
Like, right away. And
right away.
Without any consideration.
And to me, that's like one of the more unbelievable parts of the story. Like, this man came all the way from Portugal to be a missionary and to apparent, you know, or to be prepared to be persecuted. And then right away he's telling, out of human weakness, telling the people that he's serving to just go ahead and apostatize. We can talk about the provincialism and the pride or the xenophobism or whatever in that stuff. But just regarding him, maybe that's all that Christ is doing. He's saying that you've already betrayed me. Go ahead and step on it. It's fine. I can take it.
That, you know, that would be a difficult take to stomach.
Right, but isn't it the take that's in the gospel? I mean, to me, if Endo's trying, the author, if he's trying to draw a parallel to Judas and Christ, that it's all there. And it, but you know, when I read the gospel, I mean, I remember I've read it many times. It always bothers me when Jesus says it, but he said it.
I think because of my overall take on the movie, mm-hmm. I don't think it works. I think
I don't either. I agree with you, but I'm
right.
just giving
you... Oh, playing both sides. Yeah, Steve, yeah. Where's the bell? I think ultimately it's his interior voice or...
The temptation of Ferrera.
The temptation of Ferrera or that the narrator is presenting theology outside of the gospel.
Hmm. Yeah, well, of course. You either interpret it and it's like any piece of art. I mean, I think the art stands on its own. It's it permits two interpretations. But when you look at the rest of the book, I think clearly Endo was probably intending something, in my opinion, that is at least slightly unorthodox and that can't be reconciled, which is it's okay to save these people, to apostatize. That's what Jesus would want you to do.
See, I think Endo is presenting something outside of the gospel, but not that. Although that is clearly something that's going on, I think what he presents is a series of arguments that are merely justifications, pretexts, for the ultimate his ultimate failure as a missionary, which is a missionary who doesn't have only at the key moment of his witness doesn't have enough of a relationship with Jesus to see the truth, that he only hears his own voice, and which is a scandalous take, because why on earth, how could God send somebody to martyrdom and not give them the correct voice in their head?
Well, I mean, we all have sufficient grace, but
exactly, like is this person not given sufficient grace? Like, it's
well, right? I think we both agree that the book is dangerous, and the movie by extension. We both agree that it's problematic, but can be interpreted in an orthodox
way. There are multiple ways to pin down the problem.
But I think we've come down on different sides of exactly what. How it's wrong.
Whether it's a problem of theology and consequentialism, or whether it's a relationship problem.
I'm placing bets. Like, I'm putting odds on the book in Vegas. I'm like, 25%, he's saying Jesus said this, and Jesus is talking just like he did to Judas. And he's not approving of this action, he's just allowing it. Which is totally orthodox. 25%, your take, which is... You know, the opposite, which is that this man isn't being given the grace to complete what he was on a mission to complete, in a sense, which is problematic.
It's a dark story.
But to me, like, I'm still not confident in it. 50%, to me, it's Endo saying, no, Jesus would want you to apostatize for these people. And that would be truly being Christ-like.
And that in the end, faith is less important than love.
Right, which is and of course, orthodox-wise, they're inseparable. You can't truly have faith without love, and you can't truly love without maintaining the faith integrally. But yeah, earlier in the movie, one of the so-called peasants says something very much along those lines to Father Rodriguez, right?
Right, you know, he's asking him, you know, I don't know if I have a lot of faith, but I have a lot of love. Is that the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you find Father Rodriguez saying... I think they are the same thing.
Right, and these are difficult questions that are never fully able to be comprehended by man. But, you know, if you look up the, you know, the odd dogmas of the faith, you know that they can't contradict one another. But I think this movie wrestles with that question, whether they do, and if they do, which one trumps. And I would say that, of course, they can't trump, and that true love would be not apostatizing, and that these peasants who are being tortured are showing love more in their torture than you are by apostatizing to save them.
And undermining their witness and example.
And that brings us back to another point in the movie, which is Father Rodriguez, the Andrew Garfield character, is he basically sunk by pride in the sense that when he goes there, he clearly wants to be a martyr. And he's confident in his, not only in the surety of him having the right answers, but of also of him being able to communicate the faith to the peasants there and being able to suffer through it through martyrdom to the end and seeing it through. But almost immediately as he gets there, Scorsese, in the movie especially, undercuts Rodriguez's true faith or his actual discipline as opposed to his confidence. For example, when they first get there and they're offered a meal by these hidden Christians, both he and Father Grupe, the Adam Driver character, lustily eat the food immediately. They haven't had food.
Dying,
it's understandable
starvation
from a human perspective, but they don't bless the food before they eat it. And it's in marked contrast in the movie to the Japanese making sure to pray before the meal. And I mean, Scorsese's clearly making a point there. I don't know if it's a point that Endo would support fully or not, that these priests have already in some sense lost their way as soon as they touch down there. Or they're not as strong as they think they are, I guess.
Well, it plays into the contrast. What if you have a group of people with intense, incredible love and imperfect theology,
right,
or defective theology,
mm-hmm,
arguably,
mm-hmm,
versus a group of people that have the
perfect
best
faith
theology,
yes,
right? The greatest clearly words in the best language. Because remember, Europe is the faith and the faith is Europe. Right? They have everything on their
side
here.
You don't
actually
disagree with them.
No, not at
all.
Right. But
yes, Rodriguez has a great grasp of the faith. I mean, all his answers are Baltimore Catechism plus. You know, I mean, they're
Catechism of the Council.
Exactly.
Of
they are perfect answers. And nevertheless, he falls throughout the movie. And like we said earlier, he encourages other people to apostatize, even though he himself knows that it's wrong. And the question is, does Endo and Scorsese intend that to be a sign of love condescending to people's weakness? Or is it a sign of Rodriguez's own weakness in the faith as compared to the peasants who will not apostatize? I don't know. I really don't. It's a beautiful movie as far as depicting reality of these people's culture, scenery, way of life, etc. But it's not a movie that I can, like, fall in love with. I mean, it's just not. It's not a lovable movie to me at all.
No, not at all. And while it didn't feel as long as I expected it to.
It did, yes.
Only,
you were persecuted, too.
Only because I've read the book. If I hadn't read the book, I mean, that is a long, slow movie,
mm-hmm,
about an argument that I'm not prepared for and maybe don't care about. Like, I can see how this is not a movie for a lot of audiences, and not necessarily in a condescending, oh, I'm better than you kind
of
way.
No, not at all.
Really not. Like, if you haven't read the book, I don't know how much interest this movie is in terms of awards. It's a beautiful movie. I will say, great characters.
I thought all the actors were
all the actors are exceptional. Liam Neeson as a man who has lost his way and is desperately trying to justify what he's done.
Controversial opinion. It might be his best role. I mean, he was really good. Because he is the apostate priest. And you can see in everything he says that his pride, his sorrow at having done it, but yet his inability to believe again at the same time. He has to communicate a lot of conflicting feelings
through subtext.
Yes, and in what amounts to a glorified cameo. I mean, his actual screen time can't be 10 minutes, maybe.
Not even.
And he does it. I mean, he's really, really brilliant in it. I thought Adam Driver was great, too. What he communicates is kind of a reverse of Father Rodriguez, the Andrew Garfield's character, which is he starts out, as you said before we talked on the podcast, he starts out as the somewhat weaker member or the one who's questioning or seems like he would fall. And actually, in the end, he doesn't apostatize. And I think he communicates that transition or that arc really well. A lot of people have been critical of Garfield's performance. I don't know if you've been reading this on the internet. Like, not
I
that
haven't
he was,
caught this.
Not that he
I
was,
noticed he. I noticed the nomination.
Yes, he got it for Hacksaw Ridge, but not
but
for
But not for the Silence.
Yeah.
Not that you would expect him to get both.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, you know, as far as how difficult a part is, I say this was the more difficult part by far.
Oh, not even close.
Yeah. And I thought he was good, but a lot of people on the internet are like, he did not communicate the nuances that are present in the book or the struggle enough.
I agree with that, but that's also a colossally difficult task.
It is.
For
but
a movie,
but why do you agree with it?
The reason is that easily 2/3 to 3/4 of the book is a series of letters from him, where he's talking about his interior life, you know, in addition to detailing the events that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so to express externally an entire series of months of interior life
right.
is very difficult to do.
Right. But do you feel like a lot of people were saying things, and I thought he certainly was a good performance. I would never say it wasn't. But as far as like upper echelon greatness, right? Like he doesn't have that the gravitas to do this part.
I thought he did this part better than Hacksaw Ridge as two compared portrayals of Faith. I thought this was better because it was a little bit less schmaltzy, I think was the word you used in your Hacksaw Ridge episode. Mm-hmm. Relies a little bit less on...
I love Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, great movie. Okay, but definitely had 2 points at which the schmaltz was turned up to at least 8.5.
Yes, but you know what? I guess I'm first of all, like most people that talk to me in real life would say I'm on the cynical or jaded side of things, the pessimistic side. But when it comes to my movies, I'll take a heaping dose of schmaltz over... You know, just stuff that lets you feel like, hey, man, maybe life's not worth living after all. And that's a permissible interpretation of this movie. I would not say that it's not anti-Catholic at all. It's not against the Christian martyrs at all. But it leaves you in the theater with the ability to determine for yourself how much of this is real and how much of it is a fraud. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, I don't want to throw the anti-Catholic label on it in the sense that
You can't.
It's not there.
No.
It doesn't attack...
No, it is not anti-Catholic, but it's agnostic on it.
Question, is the movie Titanic a movie against ocean voyages?
And I would say no, but it's against saying that all ocean voyages are worthwhile or safe or having too much confidence in your ocean voyage. And I think that's what the movie is, really. It's about the fact that confronting this silence that we all experience, in the end, it leaves it up to you to decide what it means. And probably...
A little too ambiguous.
A little too much so, yeah.
Which is an interesting segue into a point that we do have to make about the movie, mm-hmm. specifically. So the book reaches the climax of the story and then very quickly peters everything out,
yes.
wraps everything up. I mean, at this point, you're mad. You just want it to be over. If he's not going to come back to the faith, just get it over with.
Exactly. They have an epilogue. And when I read it, I'm like, oh, good, the epilogue. It'll show us some glimmer of some change. No, nope. There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. And nope. I know that's the point of it. I'm not stupid, but I still didn't like it.
At least it was short, right?
Right.
And the movie, the denouement is dragged out a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fleshed out a little bit more, let's be fair. And there's a key scene at the end that leaves it open to two interpretations.
Okay, I'm just going to describe it real quick.
Please.
Spoiler alert. So in the book, he's given a Buddhist burial, and that's the end. It's it. There's no further information. In the movie, he's given that same treatment. But then as you peer into his funeral pyre, he has been given by his wife a crude crucifix that was a relic of one of the earlier martyrs in the film. And continue.
And so some reviews excoriate this
yes,
ending,
including Father Barron's review.
No, and perhaps rightfully so, in the sense that by giving him an indirect secret Christian burial,
mm-hmm.
is the movie endorsing what he did? Right. And you could certainly say, it wouldn't be a stretch to say, hey, Scorsese has these incorrect ideas.
And it is a major addition from the book. I mean, there's
nothing. Yeah, this is a huge departure.
Yeah.
Right. So one of two things is happening. Either they're really endorsing this idea that, yes, somehow it is Christ-like to abandon the faith for the physical well-being of others,
mm-hmm.
because your compassion for other people is really what saves you, not your faith. Or another take on it that I personally took is that if you get in the headspace of what it's like to have been an apostate, which, look, we've all made our small denials. We're not apostates, but we've all failed.
Right. We've all more or less failed Christ.
Right. Of course. Right. And which will lead into my favorite part of the movie. But, ultimately, I would love to believe that, he had to keep this screen up, mm-hmm. of being an apostate, but on the interior, he didn't you know, he didn't really abandon the faith completely, that, you know, even for apostates, life goes on.
Right. And by the way, first comment on that, we know that this in our own lives, like amongst my family members who have lost, seemingly lost the practice of the faith or criticized the faith of the Church of Jesus, they still will hang on to a memento or a prayer and continue it because they know in their heart of hearts that there's something there, okay, as much as they fight against it. And to these people who criticize it, like Father Barron, I understand that criticism. But to me, that's why I like the movie more than the book, because in the book, you're unsure whether Endo is approving of Rodriguez's apostasy or not. You're unsure of whether he kept a secret faith or not, etc. But in the movie, it's still the same. I mean, you're still unsure of all that. But at least, like you said, there's that hope that because he kept this memento, maybe he had repented at the end or kept falling and repenting. And that hope, to me, makes the movie
more hopeful, bearable.
More bearable, right? Even though I'm still not sure, he's already, we know that he apostatized, and that's problematic. We know that his continued apostasy is problematic. The hope to me doesn't detract from the problematic parts. It just gives me hope, just like it does with my own family members who seemingly are outside the faith or criticize the faith but still maintain some tie to it.
Right. And this seals a scene a little bit earlier of Kichichiro, who has betrayed him time after time again. Like, mm-hmm. When I say betray, I don't mean like, oh, you did something I don't disagree with. Like, he went to authorities to let them know, hey, this priest you're looking for is over here.
Exactly.
Okay, this is a wretched, despicable character that you wind up identifying with.
Yeah.
Much more than
the priest. Yeah, exactly.
Right? But in the end, he keeps coming back to him for confessions. Mm-hmm. But at the very end of the movie, there's just amazingly poignant scene where Father Rodriguez runs into Kichichiro, who asks him to hear his confession for having apostatized, and this time for having apostatized and betrayed him and essentially sent him to his death.
And Father Rodriguez is at this point a lay Japanese.
And he finally gets to hear Kichichiro's confession once again. And if you think about it, there's no one to hear his confession.
Exactly.
Kichichiro.
And I thought about that as I'm watching.
Kichichiro betrays the Lord, betrays Father Rodriguez time and time and time again, but he has access to the sacraments.
Right.
Right. But there's nobody within 1,000 miles easily, perhaps many thousand more, mm-hmm. who could receive him into the church should he change his mind.
And that's the burden of the priest, right? Yeah. The privilege and the burden that he can help these people, but he can't help himself in the same way. Yeah, so that was a very powerful scene too. But, it's just, there are so many moments of beauty. He's, like you said earlier, I think maybe before the podcast started, they're saying the mass for the villagers. It's beautiful, and it's the traditional mass at the mass at that time, which we're both familiar with. But hearing the contrast between the Latin language and the Japanese, and seeing them, universally understand what's going on and all that, it's very moving. The scene where the martyrs are, or the peasants are crucified in the water. I mean, that's very moving. One of the Japanese who, again, is from Japan, is a world away from Europe in more than one sense of the word, is singing Tantum Ergo as he's being killed. There's so much beauty in the movie, and yet, how can you possibly wholeheartedly, unreservedly recommend it when, as much as I want to, I can't love the movie. I just can't give myself over to it. I don't think anybody should, really. It's more of a piece to appreciate, to discuss, than to love.
In the end, it's a tragedy.
Right. But we think it's
a tragedy. Or possibly not.
I think the problem with the movie is that if it were just presented as a tragedy, no problem with the movie at all. This guy apostatized, maybe there was hope at the end.
That's true. The narrator doesn't really...
Maybe it's not. Maybe he was a hero, and that's what bothers me. But unlike some people who say, no, you can't see this. This is approving of apostasy. No, I don't agree with that either.
Well, the narrator does approve of apostasy. They are not incorrect.
I think that's an interpretation that's possible, but I don't think that's clear either. I can't wholeheartedly condemn it either. I don't think so. Like I said, I think that when I'm citing these Vegas odds, I think there's still a possibility that no, he wasn't approving of apostasy. It was Jesus acknowledging what had already happened in his heart and allowing it in the way God permissively allows all evil. Because in the end, you know, God is not silent in the movie or in real life, really. It's just that sometimes we don't like the answer. Nevertheless, I don't know exactly what the book thinks the answer is. You know what I mean? He definitely speaks. I just don't know what he says. And in a way, that's like life. I want to tie in one more point before we wrap this up, because we're going kind of long. And this is, you know, a good point to be taken from the book and the movie without knowing exactly how Endo himself felt or Scorsese feels. One of the big points in the movie, used by Rodriguez in a way and by the Inquisitors in a way, is that, you know, Catholicism, Christianity just won't take in Japan. It's too foreign. It's too late. They're just done. You know, and they say Japan is a swamp. And I said, as we walked out of the theater, you know, I get it. Japan is a swamp, but the whole earth is a swamp. You're always going to be struggling with more people. You know, many are called, few are chosen, narrow path. More people are going to reject Christ than accept him. It's going to take more or less. It's going to be more or less well understood in every part of the world. So that's the part that bothers me about this movie. It's like, just because Japan's a swamp, the whole world's a swamp. Maybe it's not going to take or take well. That doesn't really say whether it's true or worthwhile or not. And I looked up before we got on here, how many Christians are there in Japan right now? What do you think? What percentage of the population is Christian?
5 to 10% tops.
Tops, yeah. 1%. That's still 500,000 something people, though. I mean, were their efforts in vain? I would say not.
No.
And if 1% of the whole world takes Christianity and is saved, your efforts were in vain. If 0.1 person, yeah. So that's, you know, that's the part of it. It bothers me. So yeah, final verdict. Just for me personally. Like, to summarize, I would just say problematic, beautiful, difficult, but I can't love it. I don't know. I can't even rate it out of 10. I don't know how you rate something like this.
3 triangles out of 6 purple stars.
I agree with that. I was thinking purple asterisks. I don't know why. Is that fine?
I like the asterisk. Yeah, I would agree. It does many things well. Beautiful cinematography, appropriately nominated for that award. Yeah. Great characters, surprising moments of the show being stolen,
mm-hmm.
With little bits of humor in unexpected places, yeah. But ultimately just a tragedy that hopefully will make you mad.
Bottom line, like, your friend asks you if they should see this movie or read this book, what do you say?
If you want to find beauty in a broken, terrible place, then go see it.
Right. If you're strong in the faith, right? Like,
agreed.
I can't see this movie leading a truly devout, or not devout, I'm saying like a really committed Catholic.
Formed person.
A fully formed conscience. I can't see it really like leading them to like disavow the faith, okay? You know, any more than I can see like some innocent person dies in the news and it leads you out of the faith. Like, why could God permit this? But I also can't see it, like, if you're on the border, if you're like a skeptic, or like you're like, is Catholicism true or not? I can't really see it bridging the gap and making you like think, oh yes, it's definitely true. At most it would like make you think of questions you've already been wrestling with in a different way, but I don't see it like as some tool of evangelization or anything.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because of the ambiguity, especially toward the end, it's going to function kind of like a Rorschach test.
Yeah.
People who want to believe this thing about it will see that, and people who want to believe this other thing will see that.
Right. And it drives home the point that, you know, the biggest lesson from engaging with any art is to make sure that you're fully formed and ready to answer and deal with these questions, rather than be formed by the art you're dealing with.
Maybe silence itself is the swamp.
You just blew my mind. And that's it for the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. Brewmaster General Elliot Plaisance, I love you, even though you don't love anything for you. And to many future movie trips and podcasts.
Indeed. Bye, guys.
Bye.